It's Tuesday, May 17th. He's a lone wolf, but some of his ideas had already gone mainstream. We start here. The man accused of acting as his own lynch mob in Buffalo isn't the only one inspired by ideas like this.
Obsessed with this notion that white people are somehow being replaced by immigrants and others.
Authorities say the language of white supremacy is no longer relegated to white supremacist blogs, so are more attacks on the way. A mass shooting in California has been classified as a hate crime.
Evil was in that church yesterday.
But no one expected violence like this to follow a Taiwanese pastor across the Pacific. The story's only gotten more bizarre. And ahead of one of the biggest primaries in the country, the leading candidate suffers a stroke.
He's going to be on the sidelines and actually missing his own watch party tonight as he continues to recover.
What it means for Pennsylvania and for the rest of the U.S. Senate. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. Hey, glad to be back with you. I was out for a few days with COVID. I'm fine, family's fine, voice a little hoarse. But of course, in the last 48 hours, our country has been reckoning with a very different kind of sickness.
He shot a lot of people up in there. Oh my God.
On Saturday afternoon, a white man in upstate New York allegedly loaded an assault-style rifle and two other long guns into his car, drove 3.5 hours to Buffalo, and walked into a supermarket there. His goal, authorities say, was simple: to kill as many black people as possible.
We're tired of getting kicked. We're tired of getting hurt. We're tired of losing our loved ones to senseless violence.
With that suspect in custody, we are still learning more about his history, his motivations. He appears to have worked alone. But the reason I say this is a national sickness is because this type of attack has become less and less unique, and the rationale he allegedly used for his attack didn't start with him, it spread to him. New details have been emerging in the last 24 hours, so I want to start the day with ABC's Chief Justice Correspondent Pierre Thomas, who is on the ground in Buffalo, New York, along with John Cohen, who just left the Department of Homeland Security, where he specialized in violent extremism. He's now an ABC News contributor. Pierre, first off, you're there, so what is it like today for this community in Buffalo? What are you seeing?
The only thing I can describe is a sense of utter loss and this being surreal.
To lose our mother, to lose my father's caretaker.
I was particularly struck by one of David Muir's interviews, a family member talking about losing a loved one.
We don't know how to even tell him yet. We haven't talked to him about it. We don't know if that's what's best for him.
Brad, they literally were at the supermarket doing what we all do, getting groceries. And they're dead because they're black.
Right, exactly. And that's what makes it different from, there are mass shootings. This is a mass shooting. And yet this has even more of like this horrible backdrop of racism and targeting people because of their skin color. Do we know what convinces you? You got to pack up everything and drive 200 something miles to go kill people and then go to jail for the rest of your life. Like, what do we know about this suspect's background?
Well, one of my sources is describing him becoming particularly radicalized during the pandemic, and that he became somehow obsessed with white supremacy, and he became obsessed with anti-Semitism, and obsessed with this notion that white people are somehow being replaced by immigrants and others. So he became obsessed with that, sources are telling me, and they believe that from there he began planning an act of violence. He was particularly interested in other mass shooters. He made reference to, in some of his writings, to the massacre at that church in South Carolina. Just horrible, horrible things that was clouding this man's mind.
Let's bring in John Cohen, because John, we've had you on the show many times before, not in the last year because you were off serving a stint with Department of Homeland Security. Welcome back. I bring this up because I'm wondering how you've thought about this in the last year. When people describe like a lone wolf attack like this, just because you're not part of an organized plot with a lot of people doesn't mean you're acting independently of larger trends. We heard Pierre talk about replacement. There is this conspiracy theory out there called the Great Replacement Theory. You see it in white supremacist circles. What is this? And has it become, I guess, more mainstream?
The great replacement theory is not new. It's been around for decades, and it is a doctrine that basically suggests that non-whites are inferior to whites, and they represent a threat to the white race in Western civilizations. And further, it calls upon whites to use violence to prevent immigration, to prevent the Jewish faith from organizing global migration, and to prevent the diversification of our communities.
There's a belief that is fermenting on social media all over the world, where young people are being radicalized and believing that they have to take action to stop the replacement of whites by blacks and Jews and immigrants.
We've actually had a number of attacks in the country that have been inspired by attackers who have cited the Great Replacement Theory as the reason they were targeting immigrants, Jewish people, and non-whites for acts of violence. And the problem here is that the doctrine doesn't just exist in extremist forms.
This policy is called the Great Replacement, the replacement of legacy Americans with more obedient people from faraway countries.
We are actually seeing mainstream figures in the media and in public officials who are using the exact language of the Great Replacement Theory and actually citing the doctrine itself in their political narrative.
Some of the people who've used this language are nationally recognizable. People like Tucker Carlson on Fox News has used this language. Elise Stefanik, the congresswoman from upstate New York, it's actually the district right next to the alleged gunman's hometown. She loves to spout this part of the conspiracy that Democrats are intentionally creating new voting blocks with immigrants to replace native-born Americans. But all that said, John, I assume they would say, I'm just trying to make a point. I'm not asking anyone to go out and commit murder.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I would find it very hard to believe that the folks that you mentioned are consciously thinking, I'm going to use this language in order to inspire acts of violence. But it's dangerous all the same.
We're replacing national-born American, native-born Americans to permanently transform the political landscape of this very nation.
When a public figure, whether they be in the media or in politics, whether they're doing it for ratings or to mobilize their base, when they mimic the language of violent extremism, they validate the language of violent extremists. And when you have people in our society like you do, who are looking for the justification to use violence as a way to express their anger.
Why are certain people in our society trying to condone this race replacement theory? It's not right.
They will take those words, they will take that validation, and it will help validate their interest in going out and committing mass murder.
Hey, Pierre, I'm still trying to get my head around the fact that this suspect allegedly expressed a wish to commit a mass shooting when he was in high school, that he wrote that down for people to see. And then, only after that, when people knew what he was about, did he go out and was able to buy a gun. How does that happen?
Well, it's another case of missed signals and information and people literally falling through the cracks. We got very specific information from sources that in his senior year, the suspect was asked to write a paper about post-graduation plans. Well, his letter or his response to that request was to write a paper that included the words murder-suicide. That concerned school officials enough where they contacted the state police. State police looked into it, and they referred the matter to a mental health evaluation.
He went to the local hospital. He was there for, the information we have is about a day and a half, was evaluated and then released at that point.
About a year later, he's in there buying an assault-style rifle used to kill those people.
Hey, and from a law enforcement perspective, I'm wondering, are there concerns going forward from here? Because they've caught their man, right? So he's the only suspect. He's in custody. Are there other threats they worry that could arise from something like this?
Based on what you see just in New York, for example, they were increasing security at churches, black churches around the city.
Because what we're seeing right now across social media is other people supporting this person who committed these crimes as if he should be getting a trophy instead of getting life in prison.
There's a clear concern about copycats and an overriding concern. And I emphasize that word overriding and long-term concern that this radicalization on social media in terms of hate and inspiring so-called lone wolves to take action to kill people of color and people of the Jewish faith is alive and well.
You know, one of the things that I found really interesting about the document and content that was posted by the Buffalo shooter was that he not only provided a rationale or the reasoning behind why he conducted the attack, but he provided detail on how he found weapons.
Wow.
He posted a video of the attack. In a sense, he provided an instruction book for the next attacker. And this is really important to understand, Brad, because you know, the people who we see engaging in these mass murders, they study what's on the internet. They look at content that's posted there by foreign terrorist groups, by foreign intelligence services, by domestic extremists, by other people who have engaged in mass shootings in the past. They look at that material, they are inspired by that content, and they learn from that content. And that helps justify in their mind why they're conducting the attack, and it gives them the tools to conduct the attack.
Yeah, because it's chilling to think that, like, there was a live stream video of this. Twitch, the streaming service, took it down within moments, and yet that was enough time for other white supremacists and just internet trolls to take this video, repurpose it, and put it out there. Pierre Thomas in Buffalo, John Cohen, formerly of DHS. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
Nice being with you, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, this wasn't the only mass shooting of the week. In fact, it wasn't even the only mass shooting considered a hate crime this week. We're back in a bit. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/starthere today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/starthere.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Now, the other national sickness to remember here, of course, is even if you take white supremacist attacks out of the mix, the shooting in Buffalo was still only one of several mass shootings around the country this weekend.
A male subject opened fire here at the Geneva Presbyterian Church.
One of those shootings was just a few miles from my hometown in Orange County, California, at a small, primarily Taiwanese church in Laguna Woods, which is mostly composed of a huge retirement community. So, picture tons of seniors minding their business, going to church, when all of a sudden, a man grabbed his gun and opened fire. And even as sickening as that headline was, it didn't begin to tell the full story that authorities have been uncovering in the last 24 hours. ABC's chief national correspondent Matt Gutman is there on the scene. Matt, what was so upsetting about this was this is not a population that can sprint out of the building or escape easily, right? You had people swinging by the church asking if their 90-year-old mother had made it out. What happened there?
I think the greatest indication of what you just said is the ages of the people who are wounded, right? The youngest was 66, the oldest was 92. That gives you a sense of kind of audience there at this church luncheon. Everybody taking pictures with the pastor who had just come back from Taiwan when suddenly gunfire rings out in this church.
It's a large room with a big stage and a big black curtain. And it had about 10 tables set up with tablecloths. And you could tell that havoc had been created in that space.
People try to duck under tables. The gunman allegedly gets off several rounds. People are dropping.
A person left their walker, their cane, on the table. because it was obvious from the scene that they had to get out of there as quickly as possible in an utmost panic.
And so one of the youngest people there, Dr. John Chang, who's actually the son of one of the congregants, rushes this gunman. He's killed.
Lined on the walls in that social hall are New Testament phrases. Phrases about how we should treat our neighbors, how we should love.
Apparently, at some point, the gunman lowers his weapon. And at that point, the pastor for whom this is being held, who just got back from Taiwan, rushes the gunman himself, picks up a chair, slams it against the gunman, and then jumps on top of him. And at this point, I mean, that pastor is over 70.
Wow.
At this point, he's asking the other septuagenarian and octogenarian congregants to jump on. They do. It takes about five people to subdue the gunman, who is 68 years old himself. Finally, they manage to tie him up using electrical cable, and he's all bound by the time police arrive, actually the SWAT team. So it's this incredibly hectic and sad scene, because it was this joyous occasion, Brad, people coming back from, you know, COVID, having not seen this pastor in 2 years after he went to Taiwan for this welcome home party, which was just exploded by this hatred.
And I will tell you that evil was in that church yesterday. But I will tell you that that church, the congregants, engaged in the most heroic activity one could ever imagine.
Because at first, everyone thought, like, it's a predominantly Taiwanese group of people. And everyone thinks, oh, maybe it's an anti-Asian attack. We just saw this hate crime in Buffalo. Then we find out the suspect is Asian himself. And lots of people go, oh, so maybe that wasn't it. And yet now police are saying this was a hate crime directed specifically towards the Taiwanese population.
And they're going on what they say is a significant amount of evidence that they have managed to gather at this point, including writings, notes left in his car, in which he said he wanted to do harm to the Taiwanese population.
What? He's ethnic Chinese? Like, what's the beef there with Chinese and Taiwan there?
Not only is he ethnic Chinese, but he's ethnic Chinese, born in China, moved to Taiwan, has a Taiwanese wife and son. But China claims, it calls it the One China policy, that all of Taiwan is a part of China.
Right.
Taiwanese say they want their independence, and they've been essentially operating independently, you know, their own institutions, their own government. They're not really recognized, but that has been a source of massive tension between mainland China and Taiwan for decades. And the tensions have been increasing over recent years. And apparently this is what set off this suspect, David Cho.
Which is just not like a geopolitical firestorm that you see brought up all the time in the U.S., specifically not in such a violent situation. I mean, what happens next, I guess?
Well, in terms of the investigation, there is now an FBI investigation into civil rights abuses, a hate crime investigation. There are state investigations into the murder and the attempted murder of the people in that church. So Cho, the suspect, faces a potential death penalty if he's convicted. He's being held in the Orange County Jail. You know, more globally speaking, you're talking about the most populous nation in the world, which has a really big beef with this, what it calls a breakaway republic, Taiwan, and that is not going away anytime soon. In fact, we're likely to see tensions between China and Taiwan increase in the coming months.
Well, and what you much more rarely see in Taiwan is any of this spill over into gun violence, because there is less gun violence on the streets. Instead, it happens in Orange County in California, where Matt Gutman is right now. Thanks so much, Matt.
Thanks, Brad.
Well, it's another Tuesday, which means it's another big set of primary elections. A long list, too, today. We got North Carolina, Oregon, Idaho, Kentucky. But when you look at the U.S. Senate, perhaps no state has been more contested in recent years than Pennsylvania. It's currently got one Democratic senator and one Republican, and, well, that Republican seat is up for grabs. But just a couple days ago, before an important election day, this race has seen a massive shakeup. ABC's congressional correspondent Rachel Scott is there on the trail in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania. Where are you, Rachel?
Bluebell, Pennsylvania, Brad, outside of Dr. Oz's final campaign event ahead of primary day, and the rain is coming down.
So on the Republican side, we'll talk about Dr. Oz in a second because it was already hotly contested there. But on the Democratic side, you've had a few big names, and one of them has now had a medical emergency. What is happening with Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman there?
Yeah, Brad, talk about a major curveball in the Democratic Senate race here in Pennsylvania. Fetterman has been seen as the front runner in this race. And with just days until the primary, he came out and he announced that he has been recovering from a stroke. You know, he came into this national spotlight when he launched this campaign. He's really hard to miss here. He's 6'9". And he has been campaigning hard in this state, but now he's going to be on the sidelines and actually missing his own watch party tonight as he continues to recover.
It was on Friday. I just wasn't feeling very well. So I decided, you know what, I need to get checked out. So I went to the hospital.
You get checked out. Yeah.
But Brad, you gotta wonder if voters may give a second look to Representative Connor Lamb or Representative Malcolm Kenyatta, who are challenging Fetterman in this race.
I've gotten bills signed on key aspects of our infrastructure, of energy.
If you get sick, you should be able to go to the doctor and then be able to afford the prescription when you leave.
Well, and so if I'm a Republican, like if Fetterman was considered the favorite, you wonder, A, does this feel more wide open to Republicans? And B, how big is that? Since in the fall, Republicans were expected to gain more seats, but this was the chance for Democrats to take back a seat.
Exactly, Brad. And all eyes are on Pennsylvania for a lot of Democrats across the country, because this is largely seen as Democrats' best chance to sort of steal a seat away from Republicans. Remember, at stake this November election is the House and the Senate, and Democrats are looking to hang on to both chambers.
Yeah, so who are the favorites in this race now, and how is that? I mean, it's been kind of a wild Republican race as well.
Yeah, Brad, and many voters have seen this as sort of a two-man race between Dr. Oz, best known for his hit daytime TV show.
I'm the best candidate because I'm going to win the general election. I fought in the big playing field of network television.
And former hedge fund CEO David McCormick.
I'm running because I'm really worried that the country and Pennsylvania is going the wrong direction.
In the final stretch, former President Donald Trump came out and decided that he's going to back Dr. Oz.
Dr. Oz is a man who truly believes in Make America Great Again or the MAGA movement.
But there's another candidate in this race, and that is Kathy Barnett. And with just hours to go, she's been getting a lot of momentum.
And now they're nervous, and they're nervous because we're winning. And I love it.
But you know, Brad, as Barnett rises to the top, so have some of her previous tweets. They have resurfaced. They display homophobic and anti-Muslim opinions. She still feels like this is her race to lose at this point. She knows that she's picking up momentum. She sees that she's picking up steam. And despite that Trump endorsement, she says that she best represents those America First policies.
And what's really bizarre is Barnett has been asked about her old tweets, including like somebody quoted one of her tweets back to her, which says, "Pedophilia is a cornerstone of Islam," to which she said, "I would have never written that. That doesn't sound like me," despite the fact that the tweet is still up from her verified account. Rachel Scott's coming down there in Pennsylvania. I can hear it now. Stay safe on the trail, Rachel.
Thanks, Brad.
All right, we're going to take one more quick break. When we come back, aliens. That's all I'm saying. One last thing is next. And one last thing. Congress handles lots of important hearings, but there aren't many that have created as much universal curiosity as this one. Dude, is there a chance that they just come out today and say, "You guys, you were right, we were wrong, we lied, aliens crash-landed in Roswell, and now all their buddies are getting ready to take them back. Get ready, Earth."
I don't think so, Brad.
That is ABC's veteran Pentagon reporter, Louis Martinez, trying to manage my expectations for the first congressional hearings in 50 years about UFOs. So aliens are real. This is what I'm hearing.
Well, aliens are not real, according to the Pentagon. They just can't explain certain things.
You might remember last year, the Pentagon unveiled a big report about scenes like this.
Oh my gosh, dude.
Where a trained pilot captured on video what appeared to be a large object resembling a Tic Tac, which goes absurdly fast and changes directions almost instantaneously.
They looked at these incidents, they had 144 of them, and they could only explain one of them.
Now, for these hearings, Louis says UFO scholars, ufologists, are not expecting big revelations here. But after the public hearing is a classified hearing, just with the lawmakers who say they are tired of being left in the dark.
On the Senate side, it was Marco Rubio. Here on the House side, you've got a subcommittee looking into it, Congressman Carson and others, and they want to find out what the Pentagon is exactly doing with this story, because it's obvious they want to keep it alive. And if anything, they're the ones who've kind of been driving this.
And that there is the real story for UFO enthusiasts. Not that every conspiracy theory is about to become confirmed, but the idea of unidentified flying objects is no longer a joke. It's no longer really even debatable. They are still unidentified. The Pentagon says so. And people are done being told that they are all weather balloons this whole time, including lawmakers who, for the first time in a long time, seem like they want to believe as well. Like, these ufologists will be like, what's more likely, a Tic Tac that was magically built by us or the Russians that can somehow do all this stuff trained pilots can't even conceive of, or that maybe there's some intelligent life out there? Not the worst argument in the world, I gotta say. Hey, our producer Kelly Therese and our executive producer Liz Alessi picked up some hardware last night. They got our Webby Award. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram for, I don't know, maybe some trophy selfies. We're at Start Here ABC. Big shout out to Michelle Franzen and Devin Dwyer for filling in over the last several days. Thanks for holding it down. I'm Brad Milkey. I'll see you tomorrow.